From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. While the world has come together to develop organized responses to the coronavirus, such as cooperation on testing, the production and distribution of protective equipment, and exploration of best treatments, and most importantly, vaccine development, the U.S., under President Donald Trump, has stood aloof. Reports abound of the Trump administration swooping in to seize equipment from countries and choosing it to go it alone on vaccine development. Trump's withdrawal of U.S. funding for the World Health Organization in particular is emblematic of the dangerous nationalism that the U.S. is expressing. And American pharmaceutical companies and biotech firms are eyeing monopolies and flirting with price gouging. At a time when global cooperation is the best defense against a pandemic, Public Citizen has released a set of principles for what it calls global access, innovation, and cooperation. Joining me to tell us all about it is Peter Maybar-Duke, Public Citizen's Global Access to Medicines Director. Welcome to the program, Peter.
It's good to be with you.
So how exactly has the posturing of the Trump administration on the world stage been with respect to the coronavirus and especially global cooperation? I feel as though the cutting off of funding of the World Health Organization was a really big blow and a new low for us.
It's a tremendous setback. The Trump administration's insistence not only on going it alone, but really demonstrating hostility toward any sort of global cooperation makes it harder for the world as a whole to respond effectively to the pandemic, and ultimately will make it harder for people living in the United States as well. It makes it harder to generate and deploy the resources necessary to fight the pandemic. It'll make it harder to scale up a vaccine response, for example. Nevertheless, the world is plowing ahead with just that, to some degree, without the United States at present.
So when we have such a situation with a pandemic such as the one we're experiencing, isn't global cooperation more necessary than ever? I mean, you know, of course, there's always geopolitical issues, but when humanity needs to understand what this new and dangerous virus is, it seems as though, you know, there's so many questions. Every day, scientists seem to know something new about the virus that contradicts something else they knew. And so scientists from around the world working together to a common goal seems to be a critically important thing that we need at this time.
Global cooperation is essential in several ways, not least that if the pandemic goes uncontrolled in one country, it will rapidly accelerate beyond that country's borders to negative effect around the world. So what we do in the United States affects countries around the world, and what other countries do affects us. It's also the case that no single pharmaceutical company, for example, let alone a single government, has adequate manufacturing capacity to deliver what we will need in the realm of treatments and vaccines, even once we identify, hopefully, safe and effective treatments and vaccines. It will require putting all of our manufacturing capacity together just to generate enough. We also should be pooling all the best science and technology and know-how to accelerate the development of medical countermeasures. So all of this really depends on global cooperation, because there is good science and there's good manufacturing capacity set up in various parts of the world, and we just have to pool the response in order to have what we need in a reasonable amount of time.
How would you characterize the U.S. actions and responses to, you know, even countries that are normally our allies during this pandemic? I mean, I remember reading reports of the U.S. swooping in and seizing supplies that other countries were about to pay for, you know, to protect themselves. Has it been essentially, you know, America first?
It's America first, and it's also filled with distractions to try and draw attention from Trump's massive failures. I mean, the attack on the World Health Organization by President Trump is a very obvious effort to change the conversation from the Trump administration's own failures to adequately ratchet up the United States response early enough. Mm-hmm. So those failures are frequent.
Tell me about the principles, a set of principles that Public Citizen, your organization, put out, principles for global access, innovation, and cooperation. What are these principles that we need right now?
Well, more than 250 organizations signed on to principles that, yes, call for global cooperation on ensuring access, innovation, good governance, global solidarity. They basically say that rather than the go it alone and the hoarding responses, we have to be pooling our science, we have to be pooling our manufacturing capacity, and we have to have an eye on getting treatments and vaccines to the people who are going to need it most first, rather than just starting a bidding war, which is the risk right now. To your prior point, the Trump administration allegedly tried to buy out a German vaccine manufacturer and have them move to the United States. Also tried to prevent 3M from sending any masks to Mexico. Now, every country is going to need what it going to do what it needs to do or should do what it needs to do to protect its population. But we also have to recognize that there are health workers the world over, and that where the company is based, for example, is not going to be what ultimately determines whether there is sufficient manufacturing capacity or whether everyone gets it. We need to pool global resources for the global response. We need to challenge and be skeptical of a nationalism that could just lead us to having fewer solutions. But we also have to have a bit of a long-term perspective on what this is going to be like for the world at large. We're looking a year from now at the possibility of a vaccine apartheid of sorts. All the manufacturing capacity in the world, even with announcements the last few weeks and major investments to try and scale it up, we'd still be fortunate to get to a billion doses or so in 2021, even a year and a half out by the end of that year. We've got many more people than that in the world. So who gets it and who doesn't? And if we wind up, of course, in a situation where the world's rich are hoarding and the world's poor are at the back of the line, what's that going to do to fragile economies? What's that going to do to global security, people's just ability to respond and adapt over time? The pandemic may be with us for years, and we have to have a strategy to bring a secure and just world through this process. We're still far from that now.
Even within the US, we've seen that class stratification in terms of response to the pandemic, right? I mean, poor people, there was a study in LA County showing poor Angelenos were something like three times more likely to die from virus infection than those who are wealthier, where there was also this whole conversation early on in the pandemic about what testing would cost. Now it seems as though, at least after an outcry, that's a little bit under control, although we still don't have widespread enough testing. I want to ask you about big pharmaceutical companies and those biotech firms that are on the front lines of developing tests, developing vaccines, examining antibodies. Do you see these private industries mirroring the go-it-alone approach of the Trump administration and, sort of salivating at the prospect of monopolies?
Well, monopoly is the business model that the pharmaceutical industry is used to. We, the people, give pharmaceutical companies patents and other government-granted exclusivities by which they can be the only seller of a new medicine for a number of years. Now, that doesn't work in a pandemic. We have to accelerate the response far beyond that. And we're seeing both denial from industry trade association leaders that patents are going to be a problem, and also some concessions and recognition that there is an urgent need to handle business a little bit differently. So we're seeing through the National Institutes of Health in the United States and the World Health Organization internationally efforts to begin to pool data, put together some of the better research, some commitments to loose principles from some companies regarding sort of essentially nonprofit vaccine development or seeing a commitment to global access. But we're going to have to get a lot more specific. We're not yet seeing many companies saying we're going to just put our intellectual property and our know-how into the public domain, or at least license it to the World Health Organization and others. so that everybody, so all the qualified manufacturers and the best scientists can draw on that information to make better accelerated treatments and scale up and have enough manufacturing capacity for all that need it. In other words, the companies, while they have a different line about nationalism than the Trump administration, there is an analogy in that each company is pursuing its own interests individually and not admitting that they're going to need to open up and share manufacturing capacity or open up and share intellectual property and know-how. They're used to going it alone that same way. That's not going to be enough to fuel the response that we need with the time constraints that we have.
Do these companies need federal guidance or federal regulations to change how they're approaching this pandemic, given the urgency, given that lives are at stake? And if you care more about the economy, at least the economy is at stake, that they, ought to be forced into sharing proprietary information, sharing technologies, because the corporate bottom line cannot be, in this moment especially, more important than developing tools that will save lives, right?
The companies already benefit from tremendous federal largesse. They get tax breaks for certain clinical trials. They benefit. Taxpayers actually fund biomedical research and development already to the tune of $30 or $40 billion per year through the National Institutes of Health. The companies then take that research and develop monopolized products, which they sell back to us at monopoly rent. So they're already heavily subsidized by the American people and given these government protected monopolies. So we should be looking to be much tougher on the companies and just asking quid pro quo, asking like something in return for the investment that we are putting in. Something as basic as reasonable pricing would actually be a start. And that's part of the stimulus legislation discussion in Washington, but we haven't won it yet. So we need to get more serious about that. The National Institutes of Health and others are beginning to launch programs that say we're all going to cooperate. Companies are going to work with government. We're going to work with various clinical trial networks and others to try and put some better science together. But they're essentially doing convenings and sort of making recommendations about data sharing practices. They're not yet using the power of the federal government to say you will license your proprietary data, you will meet the following access conditions. And the government has a lot of power in that regard, so it needs to step up and start using it.
Right. I mean, over and over again, our government bends over backwards to require, at the very most, voluntary, regulations that gives away the bank without demanding anything in return or not enough in return. Now, in the principles, the list of principles that Public Citizen put out around how we need to approach this pandemic, you also have access for all that includes access to just healthcare, right? I mean, this is something that, how important is the idea that healthcare is a human right, health in general is a human right? How important is it, especially here in the U.S., the world's wealthiest nation, without a national healthcare system, for us to express that now?
I think it's critically important that we have a different understanding now of how healthcare should work. Of course, the United States needs a different understanding in general, but there is a moment now where I think Americans of all political stripes can appreciate that there's a different kind of need and a different kind of urgency, and that ability to pay for individuals or lack of insurance coverage can't be holding up our effort to provide care for everyone who needs it. It ought to be that way, just in terms of basic respect for human dignity. And I think we do see a lot of that sentiment across the country. But of course, it's also the case that in order to control the pandemic, and that for each of us out of our self-interest, we should be very interested in everyone getting the medical care that we need. So it's both a right and I think a necessity for the well-being of everyone in the country. And we have a long ways to go there as well, but at least we're seeing a swell of popular support for looking at this pandemic differently.
And we are hearing that there are now dozens of companies here in the United States, but even many more than around the world, that are developing vaccines or attempting to develop vaccines. They're using different kinds of biotechnology. Some are using one approach or a traditional approach. Others are using innovative, newer approaches that haven't been tested as much. All of them still have a very long ways to go in terms of a rollout for the public. These might all, on the surface, be competing with one another, but eventually one would hope some kind of a global platform where they will share that information and so that it can be rolled out publicly. But I imagine that would have to be through something like the World Health Organization, which now the US has almost essentially cut off ties from.
Yeah, well, hopefully the United States will still reverse course, and not cutting off ties so much as talking about limiting funding to WHO. It is very concerning, to be clear. Costa Rica has put forward a proposal that the Netherlands and other countries now have supported, saying that the World Health Organization should coordinate a global technology platform, essentially open science, so that companies, research institutions, all across the world, governments can put in the best science and take out what they need to develop the best treatment responses, all just a part of accelerating science, which we think is a very good idea. There are right now, depending on which count you follow, somewhere between 7 and 110 vaccine candidates
Wow.
around the world. And while, of course, it's not certain, many are optimistic that we will eventually have an effective vaccine and perhaps intermediate measures on the road to an effective vaccine. It could take multiple doses, and we don't know just how effective it will be or when it'll come. It's going to be a while yet, so we need to be taking measures until then. But we also need to be preparing right now, ramping up again manufacturing capacity, so that everyone can get access to a vaccine. We're not there yet. It's going to require cooperation. It's going to require public investment. And it's going to require some accountability for the manufacturers. But this is all changing some of the usual perspective. Like it's appropriate that there are partnerships between government and manufacturers in this area. And the National Institutes of Health had, in its announcement last Friday, said that, for example, while many companies are going to be part of their network initially, at some point we're going to have to identify the leading vaccine candidates and focus public and hopefully private resources as well on those to accelerate development. So there is this sort of beginning of developing a process of a soft norms of government institutions saying to companies, we're going to have to do this differently than we have in the past. Everybody's going to have to pool their data to some degree, but not yet using mandatory powers. And companies, of course, being a little slow to sort of get used to the idea that they're operating in a very different environment now. And so we kind of need both to get a little more assertive for the collective good.
Would it be the Defense Production Act that Trump could use for the pharmaceutical and biotech aspects of what's needed? You know, just as it was made clear that he could have used that act to ramp up production of personal protective equipment.
Yeah, among other authorities, federal government actually has pretty broad authority in this area. Defense Production Act, also the Pandemic All Hazards Preparedness Act from 2006. There's a government agency called BARDA that is responsible for pandemic preparedness, including working with companies. They've been giving out major grants, $200 million to Sanofi, $600 million more or less to Johnson & Johnson to develop manufacturing capacity and vaccine development generally. So it becomes a sort of question to us, of course, what's in those contracts? Can we see the terms and conditions and understand what the United States government is bargaining for? But the federal government has broad authority to act. It even has the authority under existing law to say that patents and other relevant exclusivities, the government's just going to use those inventions. We gave companies the monopoly, and we can authorize other parties to make use of that same technology in the public interest.
Peter, are you worried that we have an administration that is openly hostile to science, so much so that our president himself, who considers himself some sort of genius, has been actually giving out dangerous false information during his press briefings that has actually led to, you know, people poisoning themselves?
Of course, it would be embarrassing if it weren't first and foremost very scary and just an absolute necessity to counter some of the falsehoods that are coming from the White House right now. It's very unfortunate that we have such an administration at such a time. Fortunately, there are well-informed people outside and even inside the administration or inside the U.S. government doing their best to get good information out. But it's a bigger world than the United States. I mean, we've got good institutions all over the world working on this problem. Everything's flawed, but we are working together for an improved response. And we just have to have our eye on that. It's going to take time. We're going to have to be sort of patient on the one hand, and yet on the other, recognize the urgency of things like getting up to capacity so everybody gets the medical treatment that they need.
Tell me a little bit about the organizations that have signed on to Public Citizen's list or set of principles. Are these, you know, small organizations, big, a combination of both? Are you still looking for signatories to, you know, use this as a platform to pressure the government?
We are still looking for signatories. It's more than 250 organizations right now signed on to a set of principles that basically articulates a very different vision than that articulated by the Trump administration. Rather than nationalism, it's global cooperation. It's global access, innovation, and cooperation. And they are organizations from all over the earth. Every continent is represented, many dozens of countries, small patient organizations, large consumer groups. In each country, we found that sort of the message, which was negotiated among organizations that are working in very different circumstances around the world, we found that message is one that many people feel is very important right now.
So there are groups from around the world that are signing on to this, because, of course, the U.S. isn't the only guilty party when it comes to nationalism. Other countries do sometimes express nationalistic tendencies as well. We might be the leader today under President Trump, just given his whole approach of America first. You know, we've seen a different tune from the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson after he himself contracted coronavirus and seems to be chastened. So this is definitely a global effort that people are hoping for.
I think we can simultaneously recognize that leaders, that elected leaders, need to take care of their people, and that right now, and so that may mean, you know, ramping up your national manufacturing capacity. It may mean making sure that your people have what you need before you look to export. But at the same time, we can recognize that we are in a global virus situation. We're in a pandemic situation. And that means that frontline healthcare workers around the world need to have the equipment they need to control the further spread of the virus so it doesn't come all the way back to, you know, we don't have problems of second waves and reinfection and so on. So our interests really are connected at this time. And we simply don't have the capacity in any one country to deal with the problem adequately. So it's a point of mutual concern that we band together for manufacturing capacity, for controlling the virus, for keeping supply chains working to prevent shortages around the world. We have to do this together or it won't get done at all.
Peter, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out the website for Public Citizen.
Citizen.org, and we're at citizen.org/access for these access to medicine issues.
Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Peter Maybar-Duke. He is the Global Access to Medicines Director with Public Citizen. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.